Celebrating 30 years on Utah's airwaves, Western Life Radio thanks you for joining us around the campfire and for your ongoing support to Utah's longest-running home, garden, travel, and outdoor adventure program. You can always join us on our online campsite at westernliferadio.com.
Is your boat registered and insured for the summer season? Most boats must have proof of insurance on board and be properly registered with bow numbers and stickers. Take the Utah Boating or Coast Guard Auxiliary courses, and you just might get a discount on your insurance. For a copy, call 801-538-BOAT. This message brought to you by the Utah State Parks Boating Program.
Discover the magic within Utah State Parks with an annual State Parks Pass. From boating and fishing to hiking, camping, and off-highway vehicle adventures, Utah State Parks offers a wide variety of activities in the great outdoors. An annual State Park Pass opens the gate to year-round adventures at an amazing price. The annual State Park Pass provides day-use access for you and your family. In addition, Utah State Parks opens the gate to cultural and historical parks where you can learn more about Utah's rich heritage. And don't forget to reserve your favorite campsites year-round with options in teepees, yurts, and hammocks in addition to the standard tent and RV options. Visit the trailhead for more information at stateparks.utah.gov.
Faster Utah empowers teachers, administrators, and other school staff to defend themselves in case of a school shooting. We teach advanced firearms and trauma first aid skills. Graduates of the Faster program pass the same post-qualification shoot as Utah law enforcement. For more information and find out how you can help, go to fasterutah.org.
Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Put on your helmet, let's go.
But Mom, when will I be old enough so I don't have to wear my helmet? When will I become invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my helmet too. Anyone can get hurt, no matter how old they are.
Be responsible and set an example when you ride. Accidents do happen. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
Spring is fast approaching, and Sportsman's Warehouse shares your passion for hiking, fishing, camping, and hunting. If you want to feel at one with nature, this is the place to gear up. Sportsman's Warehouse has the latest in fishing to help you catch the big ones as the ice melts, or get above the inversion with new hiking boots. Their experts combined with a terrific selection truly make Sportsman's Warehouse the great indoors for those that love the great outdoors. Utah born and Utah proud, Sportsman's Warehouse, take it outside.
with your host, Brian Brinkerhoff.
Camping in the mountains, fishing in a stream. The great outdoors is where you want to be.
Mr. Alex Grover joins us online once again with Utah's Best Gardening. Thank you again for taking a few minutes with us. Happy spring.
Oh, I don't think it's spring yet. It's great to be here, whether it's spring or not, but in my book, we've still got a bit to go weather-wise.
As far as timing, there are certain things we can start putting in the ground fairly soon. What are some of the ones, as far as cool season crops, that we can be looking at right now?
I think I mentioned peas, carrots. Some books say carrots, some books say not. I've done okay with early carrots. Other people may not, but I've done okay with them. Lettuce, kale, kohlrabi, cabbage, anything in the broccoli family, which is all the brassicas or crucifers or I'm trying to think of all the other common names. Your mustard. Mustard's a great plant. Americans don't grow it very much unless you're in the South. Great plant to grow. It can go in early. Radishes, but really a lot of my mainstay on that is I like getting a good green leaf lettuce. I never grow iceberg lettuce. It's a pain in the tush to grow, and it's not nearly as nutritious as a nice green lettuce, so I get a leafy green lettuce. My favorite is actually salad bowl. I've had really good success growing that over the years. It's been easy to grow. It's been very productive. And it's got a nice taste. It's not too bitter, but it's still got some of that flavor of a leaf lettuce. And peas. I love planting peas because they are a good energy food, but they're also a green energy food. Green nutrition-wise, we're talking about all the benefits of all the vitamins in a green thing. And when I plant the peas, I'll use a snap pea or an Asian pea, something I can eat the whole pod on. That might be years of trauma as a child trying to shell peas, or I'm just lazy, which is more likely that I'm lazy. And I like just going out. I can pick the shells, seeds in them, the husk on them. It's so mature, it's not stringy, and I can put those in a stir fry, do just anything with them, and I get a good punch of sweetness and nutrition. It's really pleasant. I can eat them raw if I want to. And if I'm getting them when they're still young, because that's how you pick these snap peas or Asian peas, or there's a couple different versions genetically of this concept. So they go under some different names and from different areas. But if you pick any of those, again, it's just a really good, quick energy food. I mean, heck, if you have chickens and you have too many, you can even feed them to the chickens. And the lettuce and the peas are the two things I really think need to go in just because they're going to be ready quicker, just because they're just good quality eating. It's easy to eat. You don't have to boil lettuce forever. The peas will cook quickly if you want them cooked, or you can eat them raw. Whereas if you do kale, yeah, you can eat it raw, but your body's not going to pull as much nutrition out of it. They're not going to be ready as quickly. They're going to really sometimes take cooking to make them soft enough to eat. I don't know if anybody's eaten a full-size kale raw around here, full-size leaf. They get kind of stringy unless they're cooked. And so, again, that pea and lettuce, but you can grow the kale. Certainly you should, because it is a nutrition powerhouse. Beans, it's still early for. Corn's way too early. Definitely not squashes. I feel like I'm forgetting something, but I don't know what. But you get the picture. Basically, anything that's green and leafy is fair game, at least amongst the common things. There's always exotics that are different. Just about anything that's in the broccoli family that's related to broccoli can go in. You can do carrots, do parsnips. Never gotten my parsnips to work out, but that's okay. And again, peas. You got to have peas. If you don't like peas, I'm sorry, but plant them and eat them anyway. You'll be happier that way.
Peas are fantastic. I love radishes, too. It's a good time to put those radishes in, and then just about now, if you do it right, you can have those Easter egg radishes ready to go.
Yeah, I've had to move away from radishes because I keep on getting stuff that either I'm getting more sensitive as I get older, or I'm just not picking the right radishes because I've gotten to the point where it's just, I've gotten so hot, I just don't enjoy them anymore, which is interesting because I bought a salad at work the other day, and it had slivers of radishes in there, really thin slices, and it was not nearly as strong as the radishes I grow. It might be because I water so little, but get a little bit more pungent. I really wish I could grow more mild radishes because I really would enjoy those.
I know there's certain varieties out there. There's one called the German Giant that should grow pretty big and stay relatively mild too and not get woody.
I may have to try that one because that might be a good one. I haven't really looked at the heat of radishes until the last couple of years. And it's like, I just can't do it anymore. But I'll have to look into German Giant. I seem to remember reading something about that at one point. It's been a couple years, though, but that kind of brings up another little side tangent here is whatever you grow, you need to actually be comfortable with it, something that you want to eat. Because, you know, not everybody likes every fruit or every vegetable. And what's the point of getting an Asian pear if you don't like Asian pears? What's the point of growing a squash if you don't like eating squash? And that goes a little bit further to what's the point of putting in a dozen zucchini plants if you don't like zucchini that much? Now, zucchinis are one of the plants that do get hit hard by squash bugs, and so my family always put in extra ones because most of the time something failed except when it didn't. And that happens. It happens that we get stuff that we're trying to make it work out. It gets hit by bugs. We put extra in. I remember years growing up where the squash bugs, for some reason, didn't kill some of the zucchini. Yeah. You know what happened there, right? We had fried zucchini. We had dried zucchini. We had baked zucchini. We had canned zucchini. We had grated zucchini. We had zucchini pancakes. We had zucchini waffles. We had zucchini bread. We never pickled zucchini. Oddly enough, we should have, but we never did. So make sure what you're planting is something that's palatable enough to you, that you can eat it, and that you can eat sufficient of what you plant, not to be wasting it. Again, you can feed a lot of family with just two zucchini plants.
You're not kidding. They keep producing.
My family was small. It was me, my wife, and my daughter. My daughter is now married. So if I'm going to have a zucchini plant, I only got two people to eat it. And that's something to think about.
You were talking about pickling. We made a lot of relish out of the zucchini a couple of years, and man, it makes a really good relish.
It would, because the reason we don't use zucchini for pickles as much is they just don't have the nice crisp crack of a cucumber. It's a softer plant. It just isn't going to do quite the same thing. But if you have something like relish that's basically a pickle recipe that's just been modified and a few other things added, but they're in smaller pieces where you're not relying on the texture as much, yeah, zucchini is going to be an excellent addition.
It's a good plant, and it is productive. If you plant one plant and you want something, that will certainly give you more than you need.
Unless it gets squash bugs.
Unless it gets squash bugs. A lot of times they use them as trap plants for other types of plants in that same community.
Yeah, and that's one thing, too. A lot of people don't know how to use all the plants that get affected by squash bugs. Zucchini are probably the worst unless you have a squash bug resistant variety, which do exist. And so you take this plant that's highly attractive to the squash bugs, you plant it away from your squash because they're going to smell it and they're going to fly in and they're going to lay eggs there. And then those plants that you're not worried about them surviving, You can take the leaves off, drown any bugs you find, squash the eggs, squash the bugs, spray the heck out of them, because, hey, you're not going to eat them, right? Because you're planning on sacrificing them to get rid of those bugs, and it'll take the load off of your other plants. Not 100%. If you have enough squash bugs, they will find whatever they can do, and they will take care of it. But if you have something to distract them, something to draw them away from your favorite giant pumpkin, it is a benefit, particularly if you murder all the bugs on that plant.
Yep, it'll wipe them out.
Yep.
It's a good thing, but it's too early to plant those yet.
You darn spoil sport. Here I was going to go out and throw some butternuts in the ground, and you just ruined it for me. Thanks, Brian.
Let's take a quick break. Be back in a few minutes. When we return, we'll continue our discussion with Mr. Alex Grover with Utah's Best Gardening. And when we return, we're talking about the drought and your lawn. Stick around. More fun is on the way here on Western Life Radio. Your adventure. With 46 state parks and an impressive list of recreational opportunities.
Yes, bass fishing at Sand Hall State Park.
Visitors might have a hard time choosing what to do each weekend.
Woo! Windsurfing at Deer Creek State Park.
Choose your adventure. Explore Utah and create memories at Utah State Parks. For campground reservations, ideas for your next adventure, or to purchase an annual pass, stop by stateparks.utah.gov.
Play safe. Boating accidents happen quickly. You never know when you might end up in the water. Wear your life jacket and have a throwable life preserver on board. Remember, Utah boaters wear it. Call 801-538-BOAT. Visit stateparks.utah.gov. This message brought to you by the Utah State Parks Boating Program.
Spring is fast approaching, and Sportsman's Warehouse shares your passion for hiking, fishing, camping, and hunting. If you want to feel at one with nature, this is the place to gear up. Sportsman's Warehouse has the latest in fishing to help you catch the big ones as the ice melts, or get above the inversion with new hiking boots. Their experts combined with a terrific selection truly make Sportsman's Warehouse the great indoors for those that love the great outdoors. Utah born and Utah proud, Sportsman's Warehouse, take it outside.
Put on your helmet, let's go.
But Mom, when will I be old enough so I don't have to wear my helmet? When will I become invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my helmet too. Anyone can get hurt, no matter how old they are.
Be responsible and set an example when you ride. Accidents do happen. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
Explore the universe from one of Utah's dark sky parks. With more than 14 state park destinations to choose from, your family can gaze at the Milky Way, watch the moon rise, or make a wish during a meteor shower. With the right telescope, you can find nearby planets, tour distant galaxies, or capture the heavens with your own deep space photography. Your adventure begins with a camping reservation and a clear view to the darkened skies. Launch your epic nighttime adventure at stateparks.utah.gov.
Let's hit the lake. Put on your life jackets and let's go.
But Mom, when will I be old enough so I won't drown and I don't have to wear my life jacket? When will I be invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my life jacket too. Anyone can drown, no matter how old they are.
Accidents do happen. Protect yourself and set an example. Wear the proper safety gear when you're on the water. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
Now back to Western Life Radio with your host, Brian Brinkerhoff.
Welcome back to Western Life Radio. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff, host of this program. We have Alex Grover with us with Utah's Best Gardening. You mentioned earlier we were talking about fertilizing and how certain soils hold fertilizer better than others. It's real easy to over-fertilize if you start putting it on the ground too early.
Yeah. When you're talking lawns, your lawn is going to typically need about 2 pounds of fertilizer if you do not mulch mow it, as a minimum. You'll need 2 pounds if you're not mulch mowing. Now, if you have heavy traffic, if you have sand, if you have stressors, all those will cause your plants to need more fertilizer. Now, optimally, you're going to look at 2 pounds a year is about what I need for a minimum. 5 pounds is about what your plants can handle as a maximum. Now, if you go look at a sports field with really intense cultivation, they probably put more than 5 pounds on, and it probably does get absorbed. They're babying it to get it to absorb and recover after being played on. For homeowner lawn, with a few exceptions, I had one client, and he had constant baseball outside his lawn with his kids, and I could not get his lawn to recover. It was just getting too much abuse. But most of us, and this is, by the way, when I say 2 pounds or 5 pounds, this is per 1,000 square feet. So my apologies for not saying that straight up. So we're going to need 2 to 5 pounds per 1,000 square feet of actual nitrogen fertilizer. So when I say actual nitrogen, you got to look at the package and what's the percentage. Is it 20% nitrogen? Then you've got to figure, do the math to get that 2 pounds in. Now, 2 pounds in one application, your plants can't absorb all the nitrogen they're going to absorb through the season all at once. You can actually, by going out and fertilizing very lightly every 2 weeks, have a phenomenal lawn. It's just a lot of work, and it's really hard to keep it from getting over-fertilized because our equipment's just not made for that. As a pro, I could really micromanage how much fertilizer I put into my tank, but it's a lot harder at home because we rely on granulars because tanks are expensive and awkward and heavy and hard to move around. So anyway, that's per year. So you have to figure out how to prorate it, figure out how much use your lawn's going to get, whether you need to go closer to 5 pounds or closer to 2 pounds. And then you take in factors like sand does not hold on to nutrition very well. When I was doing lawn fertilizations for homeowners, it was very difficult because I'd get this perfect mix for the common soils in Utah, which do tend to have a little bit more clay. Then I'd go to sandy, and I could never get some of those lawns green enough in sandy. I just couldn't get enough fertilizer on them because nothing would stick in the soil. It would all wash out as quickly as possible. Even when I was using a controlled or slow-release fertilizer, it just wouldn't stick. And so that's a real struggle, is when you have one of these difficult soils where it's really, really, really horrendous clay, which, by the way, Utah has clay, but nothing compared to Georgia. Everyone, oh, I have Utah clay, I can't do anything. Oh, come on, guys, it's clay. I mean, give me a break. I grew stuff in Georgia in clay that was ready for a potter's wheel. You got nothing on that. You got nothing on that. And so, again, you've got to figure out really how much use your lawn's going to be. You've got to account for if you have really high amount of sand and you just don't have the organic matter. Again, if you add organic matter, that nutrition will stick around longer, and you'll have an easier time keeping your lawn healthy and getting it fertilized properly.
Slow release makes a difference. You can time release that a little bit and spread that out so you don't get all that into the aquifers.
Yeah, I really like using a slow release or the newer controlled release fertilizers. Great Basin has a great product for fertilizer that's good. It's a controlled release, which is even slower and more even than a slow release. You can put that on, and I would feel good fertilizing three times a year. The first two times with the controlled release, March, April, then probably again early July, and then again September, late September or early October. And that one right there can be a non-controlled or non-slow release, because kind of the idea is to put on just a very little bit of fertilizer, get it absorbed quickly so it stores into the plant, and then you can have a really great spring without having the pressure to rush it. You notice how I'm doing this. I'm using different fertilizers. I'm also not talking about the pesticides involved with fertilizers. If you go to a four-step or a five-step program, I know one of our local farm stores sells a four-step program, which they've added an extra step to that they highly suggest, therefore becoming a five-step program. That product they add, by the way, is the Humate that I talked about before that I add when I have difficulties. That first one that you apply has got a pesticide, an herbicide called a pre-emergent. And that is to get weeds dead just as they're coming out of the seed. So the difficulty that throws out is I'm trying to set my fertilization for a certain schedule, and I've gotten scranial fertilizer, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, because they've given me 2 pounds per 1,000 square feet of fertilizer, I've just done all the fertilizer I need for my lawn that doesn't get a lot of traffic and doesn't have ball playing on it in the first fertilization, and that stuff's going to wash away. And it may not be 2 pounds per 1,000 square feet, but usually it's at least a pound and a half. So you've got most of your fertilizer you're going to need for a non-stressed lawn all in one shot. Then the next fertilizer, typically you're going to add something in these four-step programs as a weed killer in it. It basically has Weed Be Gone, which is 2,4-D, by the way. That's the more generic term. Weed Be Gone is a licensed, trademarked term. 2,4-D is the generic for that. That 2,4-D or similar chemicals will be added in that second fertilizer. Again, by law, you have to do this according to the needs of the pesticide, of the herbicide. So, again, you're going to be putting down on your second fertilization about another 1.5 to 2 pounds per 1,000 square feet. So now we're up to 3 to 4 pounds in your first two fertilizations. You may not need that much fertilizer.
So you could be over-fertilizing what it really needs, and obviously you'll be paying for it too.
If you are a lawn geek, if you subscribe to, there is a Utah lawn care, I forget the name of it right offhand, on Facebook, is a group on Facebook, and like 90% of them are over-fertilizing their lawns because these guys are nuts. These are the guys that go out and put lines in their lawns and checkerboards like it's a sports field. And they're out there cutting it 2 times a week. Not everybody. I'm certainly not. And they're just these lawn fanatics. And 90% of them are probably over-fertilizing their lawns because they're so focused on having the ultimate lawn. I tend to under-fertilize my lawns. Not so much at work, because I've got to keep my job. Want the lawn to look half decent, want to keep my job. But at home, I put on only what it needs. Now, I'm getting rid of my lawn, so I did nothing for it last year. I have a maple tree and a few other trees. I fertilized those. The lawn happens to still be currently under them. But I wasn't looking to take care of my lawn at all. I want it to die. But normally, if I get 2 fertilizations a year, that's pretty good for me because I'm not going to kill every weed in my lawn. If they don't bother me that much, I'm just not going to worry about it. It's full of dandelions. It's got clover. It's got yarrow. I've got a lot of yarrow on my lawn. I like it more than the grass. I've got violets on my lawn, although since I cut back on watering from what the previous owners did, a lot of the violets have died back. If you've got violets in your lawn, folk, and you've got a lot of them, you're adding too much water. Just saying. But the thing is, lawns are this complex. You really want to have a good lawn. How much fertilizer are you going to use? How are you going to control your weeds? How much nitrogen are you okay with soaking into our groundwater? I'm in American Fork. We get our drinking water from groundwater. Provo gets drinking water from groundwater. Do you really want to do this to yourself? I've had groundwater that it tastes almost like algae, and I'm almost positive it's due to contamination from over-fertilization. Think about it, folks. This is not what you probably want to do. Be very aware of that amount of nitrogen that you're throwing down. Tie it into what your lawn actually needs according to your soil and your use. Don't go over 5 pounds per 1,000 square feet. You're not benefiting yourself. Paying money for stuff that's not going to get used by your lawn.
It's going to be pretty spendy for some fertilizers. If you have not purchased or contracted your fertilizer yet, at least on the large scale, it's time to get it done.
Yeah, now, this last November, I got promoted at my job. My boss left. I got his job. Prior to that, he was using a four-step program from a local farm store. And the way that works is you've got your four steps. I told you about the first two. The second two are just fertilizer. Yes, they contain iron. Yes, they contain different balances of the nutrients. But they're just fertilizer. There's no pest control involved. And again, in this program, we had to put down probably around 6 pounds, 6 to 8 pounds per 1,000 square foot fertilizer.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. And I don't feel like this was as good a fertilizer. I know it's slow release, but I just didn't feel like it was doing what I wanted it to do. So that's for our size lawn, for about 3,000 square foot, that's about one bag per application. We just happen to have the right amount for that. Well, when I got to this job, I kind of nosed around, tried to learn everything, asked questions, nosed things lying around. And we have got bags of fertilizer on a back pallet. Some of it, where they were experimenting with it for use for a sensitive area where they couldn't have salt. Totally wrong product for it. Was a danger to the stuff they had there, the machinery. And so it just got stashed in the back because nobody knew how to use it for a lawn. I've got other fertilizer that was straight urea. And so for my bag of four-step, that straight urea, I can use half a bag. I'm still going to use the pest-controlling stuff for the first two applications this year, certainly for the pre-emergent, because I've already got a bag that somebody left there. I've got to see how much I've got exactly left, because I haven't really inventoried that since I took over the job. But for my non-pest use, I'm going to go back. I'm going to use that urea very sparingly, because that's a fast actor. I'm going to use that as sparingly as I can. And I've got enough fertilizer as far as fertilizer goes. I've got probably 3 to 4 years of stuff I've got to use up before I even have to worry about it. I think somebody must have been saving this for me, so I don't have to go out and buy expensive fertilizer this year.
That's cool. Gives you an opportunity to invest in other things that you do need.
And fertilizer, I don't know what our acreage is, but right now I have got more space in non-turf planting areas than I have in turf planting areas. So right now, we cut back a huge amount of turf. It was 2,000 to 2,500 square feet that we cut back last year. Another area was under construction, and due to the complications of the property is leased and who the owner is and everything else, they ended up cutting water to an area and doing construction in an area that's going to cut down probably another at least 2,000 square feet of turf. I finally talked them into not putting turf back in today. I think we're all on the same page. I think they're going to go with it. I think this is going to work out. So I've reduced my turf over the last, say, hopefully the project will be done by November. We'll say 2 years, though. It started about a year ago. I've reduced my turf by two-thirds. So now I'm rotating into, I'm going to have a lot more of everything but turf than I have turf. So what my crews and what I'm doing are changing. When I started there and started doing the mowing in April, we'd already had the area that's currently under construction. I think it had a couple of mows. For some reason, I wasn't doing it, and I don't know why. But it got mowed, I think, a couple of times, and then they put up the fences, and we couldn't touch it. And so now it's going to be maintained. It's going to be a tree area. I'll fertilize it as a tree area. I'll take care of it as a tree area. In my other area, the big project we did is low maintenance, water-wise plantings. And again, I won't maintain that as turf. It's going to be different. My crews are adjusting to that. Turf is not king anymore on my property. It's not. The bosses may not know that yet. But the reality is everything else is going to start taking priority because I got more of everything else. The lawn will get mowed. It'll get fertilized. It'll get watered. I'll do my best to baby it. The reality is I got other stuff that's more important.
We got to certainly prioritize what we want, especially where we may be looking at a drought again.
Chances are so high for a drought.
You got to prepare for it. As far as preparing for greater drought conditions, what are some recommendations of things that we can do right now?
Right now, I mean, we're in March. Usually for people running secondary irrigation water, they're going to start April, May at the latest, beginning of May at the latest. So we're looking at, you got a month and a half to find a contractor, rip your strip, put in a drip system and put in plants that are more sensible to our climate, that are drought resistant, which, by the way, look awesome. That's your first thing. If you can get rid of that strip, those are so hard to water with sprays. Typically, on a well-designed strip, 50% of the water is going down the gutter or going down the sidewalk. Sprinklers are just not good at doing narrow areas. And the sprinklers we have to use there are sprays, and sprays evaporate like crazy because as soon as you turn that water into small particles and mist, it'll blow away, it'll evaporate. It's just really hard to get it to where it needs to go. So you are wasting 50% of your water just by having in a mow strip area, just by having that mow strip. If you convert it to drip and drip done correctly, not incorrectly, that's another lecture, and it is a lecture. You're going to cut your water there substantially. You're going to have a more pleasant environment. It may possibly be easier to maintain. That kind of depends on how it's installed, how many weeds you already have there, and how good you are at getting out there and getting out weeds every 2 weeks. But it can cut your maintenance if you do it right. So that is the number one thing. Is get rid of planting areas that are not benefiting you. By benefiting, I mean, are you walking on that lawn? Okay, you're not walking on that lawn. You're not using it for kids' games. You're not using it, and this is front lawns, curb area. If you get rid of that, you're going to save so much water by getting rid of that, converting to drip that never sprays up into the air, that doesn't mist unless you have a break or a squirrel chewing through it. That happens. That's going to save you so much water. It's going to make what water you use more effective. Get this done. And don't look at it as a short term. Oh, I got to get through this drought. We are going to have a hard time using water like we used to use it along the Wasatch Front. We're growing. We are going to have more building, more construction. I mean, I don't know if you've been through Lehigh lately, but have you heard of Fenn Farms, Brian?
I saw a sign next to the freeway yesterday.
Yeah. You and I both know Fenn's were mink ranchers, and that ranch is gone. Now that's going to be houses. Houses. I don't think that one's going to be condos or townhouses. I think it's going to be houses. And they're going to have landscapes, and they're going to have lawns, and that's a lot of water. I don't have the number right off my hand, and I don't think I should tell you anyway, but the description I have for how much water we use for landscape is awful. I don't have that big a landscape at work. It is a horrendous amount of water I am using to keep things green. It's going to go down this year because my predecessor had a tendency to overwater. He'd overwater or forget to turn the water system off, one or the other. But it's going to get cut down. But if you do the numbers on how much your lawn uses a year versus how much you use for your baths and your showers, yeah, you might go into shock. It's a lot. Start transferring that landscape. Now, when I talk about saving water, you can save water in your vegetable garden by just watering appropriately. We tend to overwater everything. But the biggest thing you can do to help your water usage is get rid of your turf grass. Second thing you can do is learn how to water appropriate so you're watering for what the plant needs rather than what you feel like you want to see go on it. We love our plants. We coddle them. We baby them. And we overwater them on a regular basis. Having said that, I have a hard time getting a good blackberry harvest because I only water once a week. I got to do 2 waterings a week for blackberries, for raspberries, and for strawberries, especially in the sand I'm in. So everything in context, but you can cut down on a lot of your watering. If you've got clay, you probably don't need to water twice a week for your berries. I do.
It's time to think about those things, and any way you can save some water now will certainly pay dividends down the road.
Yeah, you can say, well, the government owes me this water, and no, they don't. Water is a common resource. You may have water rights, but as soon as we get a drought, you're going to get your water rights restricted because you have shares, not gallons, not acre feet. You have shares. So when that water company only has X number of acre feet or X number of gallons, then it's going to be divided amongst the shares, and you got 7 shares, you're going to get 7 parts of however many shares there are. You're going to get water restrictions, even though you think you own that water. You have a well? Great. You got a lot of control of that well. You got a lot of control on your water. What if that well runs dry? What water do you have? You own it. Oh, wait, I don't have any more left. Yeah. So any way you cut it, you can give me any excuse you want, but the reality is it's community property. Even if you own rights or a well or whatever, if there ain't no water in there, there ain't no water in there, and you're not getting any water. Use what you have wisely, and you won't end up getting shorted.
Exactly. You've got to look at the long-term picture and work with each other.
Thank you.
Is your boat registered and insured for the summer season? Most boats must have proof of insurance on board and be properly registered with bow numbers and stickers. Take the Utah Boating or Coast Guard Auxiliary courses, and you just might get a discount on your insurance. For a copy, call 801-538-BOAT. This message brought to you by the Utah State Parks Boating Program.
Check over your boat trailer before heading out for your first family adventure. We're checking the bearings next on Western Life Radio.
Knowledge is power. Empower your teachers, administrators, and other school staff to defend themselves and their students. For more information, go to fasterutah.org.
There's nothing quite like the great outdoors, and at Sportsman's Warehouse, we share your passion for hunting, fishing, and camping. If you want to feel at one with nature, this is the place to gear up. So whether you're ice fishing, predator hunting, snowshoeing, or winter camping, Sportsman's Warehouse has a terrific selection of all the latest equipment for your outdoor adventure. So when it's cold outside, that's the time to come and see what's hot inside at Sportsman's Warehouse. Sportsman's Warehouse. Take it outside.
Put on your helmet. Let's go.
But, Mom, when will I be old enough so I don't have to wear my helmet? When will I become invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my helmet, too. Anyone can get hurt, no matter how old they are.
Be responsible and set an example when you ride. Accidents do happen. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
Avoid getting stranded along the highway on your way to your first boating adventure. Ty Hunter with Utah State Parks and Recreation checks the trailer.
Typically in Utah, we have 3 to 4 months that are not fully accessible for boating. I mean, you can still go to the southern end of the state and do some boating year-round with that. But most of us, when we're up here, we're going to put our boat away. It's going to be 3 to 4 months at a minimum that they are stored and put away. So there's a few things to think about. Main thing is your trailer. I know everybody starts to focus on your boat. Let's get everything going. But think about that trailer, because that will make or break your first trip. Plus, it's not having your boat to run. But make sure that you check your tires. How old are your tires? Are they showing cracks and weathering? The biggest thing is it's kind of forgotten. How many times you start seeing in the spring, you'll see a boat trailer off the side of the road, jacked up. They got a jack underneath it. Usually that's a bearing. Somebody didn't pack their bearings or do any maintenance on the bearings. That grease is broken down from being dipped into the water from the year before and then just sat through the winter. So get your bearings repacked. Lights. Lights is a frustrating thing. They're frustrating on a Christmas tree, and they're frustrating on any type of a trailer. So please check your lights. Make sure that your plugs, your receptacles are good and without corrosion.
Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.
Play safe. Boating accidents happen quickly. You never know when you might end up in the water. Wear your life jacket and have a throwable life preserver on board. Remember, Utah boaters wear it. Visit stateparks.utah.gov. This message brought to you by the Utah State Parks Boating Program.
All right then, let's go to Blackwater County, Rise and Fall, for our acoustic campfire concert celebrating the big St. Patrick's Day weekend. Stick around, you're listening to Western Life Radio.
Just another way to kill some time for what you're worth, 'cause you don't have long. more time that it makes no sense at all. Just make a promise that you'll be the best you're rising for.
So I don't have to wear my helmet. When will I become invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my helmet too. Anyone can get hurt, no matter how old they are.
Be responsible and set an example when you ride. Accidents do happen. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
Choose your adventure. With 46 state parks and an impressive list of recreational opportunities.
Yes, bass fishing at Sand Hall State Park.
Visitors might have a hard time choosing what to do each weekend.
Woohoo! Windsurfing at Deer Creek State Park.
Choose your adventure. Explore Utah and create memories at Utah State Parks. For campground reservations, ideas for your next adventure, or to purchase an annual pass, stop by stateparks.utah.gov.
If you would like a little more from your range experience than standing and shooting holes in paper, come and train with us, TaylorGunsmithing.com.
Is calling to me. Whoa.
Folks, you've been listening to Western Life Radio, a 30-year outdoor and Western lifestyle tradition. Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.